Any of you waiting for something to happen? Ask yourself, are you waiting for something to happen? Probably not an unreasonable expectation that something will happen. In fact, it's guaranteed something will happen. What is an unreasonable expectation is that it will be the thing we want or the thing we expect. And yet it seems we come with so much expectation into our life, into our experience, into this moment, into a retreat, perhaps. We think we know how it should be. And some of us are reasonably keen on telling those who they think are in charge of how it should be, how it should be. It's kind of an interesting phenomena. We were just commenting at dinner time on the notes about various comments and people really quite kindly and out of the goodness of their heart letting us know how things really should be. Obviously because we didn't realise, and it's kind of interesting, isn't it? How much we have an idea of what should be and how much we want it to be like that. It is the intention of a retreat that we should come face to face with that reality. The reality that we have an expectation. Perhaps even we have a demand that things should be in a certain way. And that we know how that is, despite the fact that the rest of the world doesn't know, clearly, how things should be. I know. And in a retreat, part of the intention is that we come up in contact with that because we can't make it the way we want it. We can't get it the way we'd like it. Not everybody agrees on what is the best way to do it. And in our lives, where we tend to be somewhat independent, or at least think we are, we go off and do our own thing whenever we want to, so far as we're able, we don't really so often have to confront or come up against this experience. When we come on a retreat and we're all here together, it seems that some people like it one way, quite reasonable, you'd think, but some other people like it another way. And so, you know, it would be nice if we had more light or less light, more air or less air, more windows and doors open or less windows and doors open, more noises being made by somebody out there or maybe less noises. Do you find yourself at any time thinking about all that sort of thing? Do you find yourself generating pressure within yourself that tends to normally go out? And if we can discharge it outwards, we feel like we have some relief. If we can give somebody else that pressure, then it seems to relieve our own experience of being compressed. But ultimately it doesn't. Ultimately it simply reinforces the tendency to create pressure. And we ourselves are the primary victim of our own pressure. Nobody does it to us. The world doesn't do it to us. We do it to ourselves, without realizing it, mostly, unconsciously, tragically. We start tightening up inside, because what's going on is not what we wish for. On retreat, we try to draw some lines, you could say. In some ways, they're just lines in water. They're not solid. You know, the schedule. No, actually, you know, we just made the schedule up. It's nothing holy or sacred about the schedule. We just sat down at the beginning of the retreat and thought, oh, well, you can do it like this, you can do it like that. We'll do it this way. Probably my preferences had some significant input on the way it turned out, but that wasn't the only thing operating. We just made it up. And the point isn't whether it's like this or like that, but that by making a form, creating a form, and then saying, okay, let's follow this form, we have the opportunity to begin to see ourselves. The Tibetan word for retreat translates as boundary. It's a really useful idea to reflect on, a boundary. It's like we create a frame within which, because we choose, and we only choose, nobody can make us. Who can make us do something we don't want to do? Unless they have a big stick or are willing to use violence, and certainly no one here is going to be willing to use violence. Certainly not of those in charge, and I suspect not of any of you participants either. Nobody can make us do something like this. And if they did, we certainly wouldn't be mindful. You know, they can make me sit here, but I'm not going to be mindful if someone was forcing me to do it. But we're choosing this. You've chosen to come here. Probably you had some idea of what you were choosing to come to. And probably some of this you didn't really know you were choosing it. You didn't really know maybe what it might entail if this is your first time. And of course, how could you? It's like trying to explain a colour to someone who cannot see. Until you experience what this is, you can't know what you're coming to. But in choosing that, there's something in you that's chosen to come here. Even though in the mind you might not have known that you were coming to a place where they were going to get you up really early in the morning, make you do apparently meaningless activities through the whole day, and require you to follow this form the same way as everybody else does. We wouldn't know that that's what we were coming to. Well, maybe you have some idea, but you wouldn't know what it's going to feel like on the inside. What it's going to feel like when we say, but I want it different. I want the food to be different. I want the air to be different. I want the teaching to be different. Whatever it might be, we wouldn't know that. But something in us knows when we're coming to this. Something that brought us here perhaps realizes it's important to put ourselves in a place where we can't, and where it's really clear to us that we can't just have it the way we want it. Are we willing to put up with discomfort? Some degree of discomfort. In order to discover something that could transform our lives. Would you be willing to do that? To put up with some degree of discomfort. Discomfort in mind, discomfort in body. And the body gets uncomfortable when we leave it in one place, doesn't it? Doesn't matter whether we're sitting or standing or walking, even lying down, as some of you seem rather keen on, despite our encouragements to sit up. And of course, you know, in the end, we do what we do. But even if we lie there, we find if we don't move, actually we become uncomfortable. Any position you take, if you stay there, it stops being comfortable eventually. The most expensive mattress you can lie on, if you really don't move, you'll get uncomfortable. Old people who can't move not just get uncomfortable, but the skin starts to break down if they don't move enough. It's really, really painful, unpleasant and tragic for them. Really difficult condition. My grandfather died about, I guess, 4 or 5 weeks ago now, and this is one of the conditions he had in his last days. He was 94. And he couldn't move. We sometimes think, if I could just lie down all day, wouldn't it be so nice? Did anyone think of that today? When we really stop, our body will become uncomfortable. You think it's because of sitting in meditation. Some of that. Yeah, some. Some of it's because of the pressure we put on ourselves to have a certain experience. Some of it's because the posture is unfamiliar, the body isn't so flexible as it could be. Some of it's because we're just not moving so much as we used to. We're used to constantly moving. We're constantly shifting, shimmying, shuffling, adjusting, changing, shirt on, sweater off, you know, open the window, close the window, turn on the air conditioning, turn it off, get a blanket, turn on the fan. All this we're doing all the time in order to be comfortable. And did we ever get to the place where we could stop and be comfortable and stay there? If we did, what are we doing here? Wouldn't we still be there? Because I can assure you, this is not the place where you're going to be permanently and eternally comfortable. I guess you've probably caught on to that by now. Now, you may still be living in the hope that in a day or two it will be permanently comfortable. I can save you the pressure of the expectation, the hope and the disappointment right now. It isn't comfortable, is it? Much of the time at all. How much time are we really comfortable with our mind? With what it's like to simply experience what's going on in there. How much of the time are we at ease with that? It's not a random accident that mostly we tend to space out or run off somewhere else in our mind when we begin this kind of work. And continue to notice that tendency as we do this work over years and perhaps lifetimes. It's because it's somehow not comfortable. It's something that rubs in our experience so much of the time. And if we think we're here to get a more sophisticated and spiritual mode of succeeding at being comfortable, again, we're going to be disappointed. Now, you can, if you wish, spend the whole week working on this. You could actually come to some more retreats and eventually, you know, sort of, you would probably get the picture. But on the other hand, if I'm saying to you this, does it mean you want to go home? It's not going to be comfortable. I'm not saying it's going to be horribly uncomfortable. Actually, it can be quite nice. Food is good. People are mostly friendly. Beautiful view. In fact, some nice music playing now. Sound of people enjoying themselves when we're sitting here, sitting, being mindful. Why not? Why shouldn't they enjoy themselves? Hopefully they are. The children singing and dancing. Eating pizza, it looks like. Something more important than that. Because I think there is. And actually, I think you know there is too. But we're so caught in the habit of trying to be comfortable. It's in some ways ridiculous, laughable. So long as we're laughing in a friendly way at ourselves, it's sometimes the best antidote or the best response to how much we struggle to be comfortable in the face of a reality that isn't. And look at this body. It's quite remarkable that we've got one at all. I mean, that's another whole topic. We'll maybe get there later. But for now, just, we have a body. Wow. But look. What does it go through? It sits here, and this bit starts to hurt, and that bit starts to hurt, and this bit starts to hurt, and then I move it, and some other bit starts to hurt. Some people are looking to see which bit was hurting. Maybe they're wondering if it's the same bit as their bit that hurts. Body experiences pain. Sometimes I get sick. I had a cold the last 2 weeks. I'm just about over it. So hopefully I'm not infectious. But we get sick, don't we? Sometimes we get sick. We don't like that. Of course, a bit of discomfort and a bit of sickness isn't actually that bad, mostly. Sometimes it's serious. It can be really difficult. But in the end, we're going to die. This body stops functioning. And a little, for most of us, before it gets to that point, it gets a lot more uncomfortable than it is now. And that is something that not only is it's a physical discomfort, but this is a mental discomfort. That one day we have to die. And before we get there, we're probably going to experience something quite uncomfortable, painful maybe. Certainly challenging for most. It's like that. And so we're, in our mind, trying to figure out how not to have to go through this. How can I make it comfortable for me? How much of our life is about that? About trying to make it comfortable for me. Great thing to do, if we could actually make it happen that way. Doesn't work. You know, if it was going to work, we'd have done it by now. So let's not make the mistake of thinking that meditation is going to be a better way of doing the same thing, trying to get comfortable. meditation practice. What we're engaged with here is actually about having a willingness to face the reality of discomfort and to see if it really defines the quality of our life in the way that we believe that it does. Because what we believe is that if I'm not comfortable, I have to be miserable. And that only can I be happy if nothing is uncomfortable. If that were true, happiness would not exist. That's like bad news, doesn't it? At some level, it seems like bad news. But it's really not. Because we have to see this. This is, and I referred to this last night, the Buddha spoke about this. That we have to understand the truth of suffering, of unsatisfactoriness, of dukkha, he called it. That we experience body, subject to birth, aging, sickness and death. All of us do. Every human being, every being that is born experiences this. We have this heart. We have a heart. Sometimes we wonder where it is, but we do, that's for sure. And by that I mean not just a physical organ, but that sense of how we feel. You know, some people say, I don't feel anything. They come and tell me, I don't feel anything. And I say, sure, maybe, how is that for you? How do you feel about the fact you don't feel anything? I say, it's really terrible. I want to feel something. That's the feeling. It's there. We just think that it's not. So we feel, and when we have a heart, it's touched. Life touches us. It's like there's this part of us that is affected, is touched by what goes on. Not just our body. Our body is touched by the physical environment. But our heart is touched by the sense of the life around us, of what we're in contact with that's alive. That's within us. That's alive, yeah. You hopefully have noticed. And what's outside, which is also alive. That we're in contact with. And when we have a heart, this place that's contacted, that's touched, it's subject to both the sweetness and tenderness of love and appreciation and delight. We've all known that experience. But it's also subject to the experience of loss, of grief, of pain, of sorrow. And you know, that's inevitable. We cannot live in this world without that. Just as our body is subject to the difficult, so too is our heart. And there's a way I kind of understand this for myself that I find helpful. Because sometimes we think that if I did it right, okay, so my body's going to go through some suffering. Well, that's body. But my heart, no, if I lived my life perfectly, there'd be no painful experience. It's only because someone else did it wrong or I did it wrong. Notice how much we blame. Blame ourselves, blame others for the way our experience is difficult or challenging. It's really useful to start to take responsibility for that. Again, I referred to that last night. Here, we'll notice that tendency to think it's someone's fault very easily. Maybe my fault, I mean me, oh it could be my fault, yes. It could be the teacher's fault, he's making me do that, or they're making me do that. Or it could be me, as in you, the meditator, it's my fault. Or someone else, some other meditator or staff person or visitor from across the way. We get into that. But if we don't get into that blame, coming back to the sense of it's inevitable. How is that? Why is that? For me, what's apparent is that we have this heart and it has this remarkable capacity for love. Just as mysterious and remarkable as the fact that we have a body is that there's this condition that touches the depth of our being. We call it love. It inspires infinite number of poems and pop songs and lots of conversations and many other things. And that, you know, if we allow ourselves to love something, if we love something, and most of us will in our life, if we love something, at some point we'll be parted from it. And that will be painful, deeply grievous to our heart. That loss will touch us deeply and keenly. And I think you probably know what this is about. This is not news to you. Most of what we say up here isn't something we think you haven't heard before. But it's like things we know we don't necessarily really let in. As there's that reality that if we love something, at some point we'll be parted from it. This must be through choice, through accident, or ultimately through death. This happens for us all. So there will be grief, there will be loss, there will be sadness there. And you know, if you don't love something in this life, there will be grief in that. There will be sadness in that. That will be painful. So either you do love something or you don't love something in life. Either way, the heart will feel that tender grief and sadness. Most popular wisdom recommends better to love something and feel the pain, rather than just not love something and feel the pain anyway. This isn't particularly Buddhist wisdom. This is just, I think you find it in all sorts of ways expressed. But there we are. We have a body, we have a heart. We have a mind. Now actually, compared to what the body and the heart go through, the mind is actually the thing where the suffering really bites. Where that lack of comfort is most keenly felt. And for many, it seems, is the consistent and almost constant condition. A sense of unease, which easily becomes a sense of dis-ease. It's like there's almost an illness in the minds of the people of our world where they are not comfortable. And they're constantly and desperately looking for a way that their mind will come to ease. And in the process, causing an immense amount of harm to others and to themselves. And it's tragic. It's tragic. Why do we experience discomfort in our mind? Because we are, at times, associated with that which we don't like. At times we're separated. That's what the Buddha pointed out. At times we're separated from that which we do like. At times, and all too often, we don't get what we want. This causes suffering in our minds. If we haven't understood what we need to understand, we suffer over this. Calmness to look at this, perhaps in a new way. The odd smile and nod, the odd, I don't know about that, seems to be looking back at me. It's fine, you don't respond as you like. Interested in discomfort for discomfort's sake. It's not like we need to make more of it. There's enough going on already. But not being comfortable. If we think that the real discomfort is to do with the fact that our experience isn't the way we want it to be, we're doomed. Doomed to keep on trying to make it the way we want it. And failing. The great story I often tell of Mulla Nasruddin, who's a Sufi teaching figure, known as both a wise man and, it appears, a fool, though one suspects his foolishness is simply to wake us up to our own. And one day, Nasruddin is sitting in the village market on market day in the market square with a large pile of red chilies in front of him, picking them up and eating them, one at a time. Face is bright red, his nose is streaming, his eyes are running, he's in intense distress and discomfort. And one of his friends come up and says, Mulla, what are you doing? Nasruddin picks up another chili, bites into it, and his whole body shudders with the fiery pain of this experience. He says, through the tears and the mucus, he says, I'm eating these chilies. And the friend says, Mulla, I can see you're eating those chilies. Why are you eating these chilies? Nazarim smiles at him. He says, I keep hoping to find a sweet one. Do we see ourselves in that in any way? I mean, it's kind of like we can laugh in a caring way about how unfortunate, what a kind of tragic perspective to hold. And yet, don't we do something like that ourselves? How much time are we waiting for the next moment to be better than this? Hoping that where we get to at the end of the sitting, at the end of the walking, at the end of this Dharma talk, the end of this retreat, the end of this or that, somehow we're kind of leaning forward. We're leaning forward, looking for that condition in which we can rest. And here what we're saying is, notice what's going on. Notice what it feels like to be being leaning forward, to be pulled, as it were. Because we're pulled by this wanting for, this hoping, this praying desperately for something in the next moment to be better than this. And equally, at the same time as we're pulled, we're pushed by our fear and our aversion to the condition that actually is what it is. This body, heart and mind. That's what's going on here. Body, heart and mind. Same one that you have in your life. This one's not actually any different. At the end of the retreat, it's probably going to be much the same. That might be a little disappointing. Now, what might change is how we understand it and relate to it. If we can do that, if we can understand this body, heart and mind and begin to relate to it from wisdom, that will not be a disappointment. That will be a relief and a release of the suffering and of the struggle. To that point, we have to start where we are. And where we are is here with this condition. So long as we're trying to get this condition to be different, we're never going to land here. We're either going to be leaning forward or leaning backwards, and we're off balance. And when we're off balance, it's like if you're standing out in the wind, as we were this afternoon. Did you notice what it would be like if you weren't paying attention to your balance in that strong wind? Could almost blow you over. If one spaces out and we lean over a bit, and there we go, flying off our cushion or off our feet. And balance in the midst of our life is what we have to begin. And balance comes from being willing to be where we are in the midst of the conditions as they are. And so far as we're always looking at what do I need to change, what's wrong, what needs to be fixed, we're never at balance. We're never actually rooted. Getting carried away. We keep getting carried away. And of course, as has been suggested, we come back, we find we can come back, but we keep getting carried away. Because we believe in that process. It's like believing that the next chili is going to be sweet. The next thought is going to be the one that really solves my life. So I better follow it. Where does it take you? It's like, you know, we get on a train, it looks like it's going to paradise, and it turns out after it goes around the corner, the bridge is washed out, and it's a train wreck. How many times do we need to follow that? Ask to do is actually turn towards that experience of wanting something or wanting to get away from something. Not to judge ourselves for the experience of this. Not to judge ourselves for the number of times we get caught in and carried away by it. But to begin to look and see, can I meet this? Can I feel this experience itself? Because it is in fact that wanting that is so painful. And that aversion or not wanting, it's that is the experience we're trying to escape. Not the thing that we don't want. It's not the lack of the thing we want that's so painful. It's the wanting that actually hurts. And when we get the thing that we want, for a moment the wanting stops. You go, ah, it's great. So nice. And it is nice, but not because we've got the thing we want, because the wanting has stopped. Yourself, because once you've got the thing you want, you should stay happy. Forever. No, the wanting starts up. Okay, well I've got this, now I want that. And actually what we've done is we've actually been feeding the wanting. We've made it stronger, not realizing that it is actually what hurts. And in this I'm referring to the sense of craving or neediness or sort of give me that feels like it has no space in it. There can be and is an appropriate sense of what our genuine needs are that we recognize. And of course we would wish for happiness, well-being, peace, food, shelter, safety, all these things quite appropriately and many more. It's not to negate or discount that. Recognizing of what's appropriate, wholesome, beneficial, and the way we incline towards it, which might look like wanting, but it's not wanting in the way I'm speaking about it now. That's actually more to do with a genuine sense of caring and cherishing ourselves and others. Don't you feel what it's like if we just turn towards that sense of I don't want it like this, and experience that, get to know it from the inside, rather than trying to yourself or get someone else to fix the thing that you don't want? Because the world is full of people trying to fix the thing they don't want. The world is full of people doing things that they think are a really good idea. And look at the world. Much goodness and beauty in this world, but one can't help but notice that a lot of what's going on out there is tragic. And yet we don't have to become part of that. We're not obliged to act out this pattern, this habit. But it requires some commitment. It requires some willingness to surrender our agenda, to surrender my idea. We like it because it's my idea and it's good, of how it should be. What if you were to give that up? A friend of mine has a notice that she has pinned on her refrigerator, and it says, if I can remember, there is no reason why things should not be the way they are. It's like we think they shouldn't be, but actually things are the way they are. And they have to be that way. They can't be any other way. It's what we have to bring to the situation. See an immense amount of love. An immense amount of kindness. To actually let ourselves be with the frustration, the struggle, the fear, the desperate hope. Let all of it be there, and yet not have to act on it. Not have to enact it through word or deed. So far as we can let ourselves feel it, meet it, with a genuine sense of caring, in the same way we might meet a distressed child